Today I want to focus just on one of the aspects of the Meraglim story. Because we've been focusing throughout Bamidbar on the theme of Moshe's leadership and the transition of leadership, his failing leadership, his need for other leaders to be involved, the challenges to his leadership. It's interesting to look that at one of the parts of the story here, which is the two different types, well, really three different type of emergent leaders that you have in the story, right? You have the failed leaders, which are the Meraglim, but then even Yehoshua and Kalev, who are successful leaders and oppose the Meraglim and challenge their narrative and challenge their pessimism and say we can do it. They're very different personalities, and because only one of them is going to take over for Moshe, it's sort of a good time to take stock of these two different models of leadership and why it is, in the end of the day, that when Moshe's leadership does end, Yehoshua is the one who takes over and not Kalev. So if we start right off the bat, when Moshe chooses the Meraglim, and this is number one. So the first thing he does is he singles out Yehoshua, and he renames him. Right, Eila Shmona Hashem Ashalach Moshe Latur Daaretz VaYikra Moshe Lo Sheyav Ben Nun Yehoshua. These are the names of the Meraglim, the people who Moshe sent to scout the land. But Moshe changed Hoshea's name to Yehoshua and became Yehoshua in this story. Now, why does that happen? So Rashi quotes from the Gemara the tradition that the reason he did this is because he didn't trust Yehoshua to be able to stand up to the Meraglim. Now, right, there's a lot to unpack in that midrash. Right, you can look at just Rashi. Right, Vayikra Moshe lo Shea. He palel alav. He davened for him. He prayed for him that ka Yoshiacha me'atzat Meraglim. Like, may God save you from the advice or the bad advice, the evil counsel of the spies. Now, like I said, there are many things to unpack in the Midrash. First of all, Chazal's assumption that Moshe already knew that the Meraglim were going to fail or possibly going to fail is a very strange claim by Chazal. I mean, if that's true, then why did Moshe send them? Why pick them if you know they're going to fail? If I wanted to interpret the Midrash more. I'd have to say that perhaps he didn't know that would happen, but he knew that's the danger, right? Whenever you send strong-willed personalities, you don't know what's going to happen. But it does sound, the simple read of the Midrash, as Rashi presents, is that he knew that they were going to be evil, which, like I said, just makes the whole story very, very odd.
Possibly he knew their personality.
Right, but then why would he pick them, right? That's the real question, right? It sounds like, Moshe chose them, unless you think that the people chose them and then Moshe just realized what was going to happen. But again, he should have stepped in, and he doesn't, right? I think you have to soften the Midrash somehow, right? That he saw that as a potential, right? But he, especially we talked about the possibility that maybe their motives changed while they were there, or that they started off more courageously, and then once they saw the giants and they started to panic, so then they started to come up with their alternative plan to dissuade the Jewish people. But be that as it may, Rashi highlights that Yehoshua wouldn't have, or at least the simple implication, wouldn't have been able to succeed in standing up for what's right and good if Moshe hadn't prayed for him, especially, which he doesn't for Kalev. We saw this midrash a few weeks ago, so I just put a mention of it here. This fits with Chazal's general notion that you have in Kohelet Rabbah, that Yehoshua is known as a flawed or weak personality until this point. In the Torah, the two points that we meet him previously, at least as a talking personality, we meet him as a non-talking personality a few times, but the first two times he talks, as Chazal note, once is at when Moshe comes down from Har Sinai at the Chet HaEgel, and Moshe and Yehoshua are discussing the noise that's coming from the camp, and Yoshua says, oh, what I hear is war. And Moshe says, you don't hear war, you hear rebellion. Right? This is right, you can't perceive the difference. That's not right. This is not the strong versus the weak. This is just yelling and screaming and revelry. And then the second time we meet him is just a little bit ago, where where Yoshua tells Moshe, when Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp, Adoni Moshe claim, imprison them, stop them. And Moshe says, I don't want to stop them. Just let everybody be a prophet. So the Midrash in Kol Rabbah says, well, you see that Yoshua, the first two times we meet him, makes a mistake. Which is why the Jews panic when Yoshua is chosen to take over, because the only thing they know about him is that he's not perfect, that he makes mistakes. And then, if you add this Midrash and this Gemara that Rashi quotes, the third time you meet him, when he sounds like a hero, right, he stands up to the Meraglim, the Midrash says, yeah, not so much. Right? He does, but he wouldn't have managed it had Moshe not prayed for him. Not Kalev, right? Kalev doesn't need it. And that creates a pattern, a three-time pattern, right? At which he is weak. He's a weak leader. He's a flawed leader. In contrast, Kalev is presented by Chazal as being the opposite, right? In number four, the pasuk says, "Vayalu v'negev, vayavo ad Chevron." They go up to the Negev and come to Chevron. Now, grammatically, that sentence is weird because "Vayalu" is plural, and they went up to the Negev. They went up south. Right, they went up from the south. Vayavo, and he came, right? That's singular, ad Chevron. And once they got there, then it tells you that the giants live in Chevron, and that Chevron had been built 7 years before, and so on. Mitzrayim. And Chazal again, in that same Gemara, and Rashi quotes it again, pick up on this grammatical inconsistency, and they suggest that Vayavo is not accidental. It means that only one of them went to Chevron. And who is that? So Rashi number 5 says, Vayavo at Chevron. Who's the single person who went? Kalev levado halach sham. It was only Kalev. V'nishtateach al kivrei avot. Shelo yin yaseh lechavei rav. V'yot ba'atzatam. He went and he prayed by the patriarchs, so that he wouldn't be tested. He wouldn't be joined in the council of his colleagues. And that's why he eventually gets Chevron as a gift. And Chazal again are highlighting the fact, you know, they're drawing attention to the fact that Yehoshua and Kalev both could have failed. But Yehoshua succeeds because Moshe intercedes on his behalf. Kalev succeeds because he shows initiative. Now, where do Chazal get this from? Right? Where are Chazal getting the notion that Yehoshua is a weaker leader in that sense and needs some outside push, and Kalev is a self-starter? To be fair, my guess is that they get it from the story of the Meraglim itself, which you remember from last week. I'll just go back to it. That Kalev, right, there's two stages to the discussion with the Meraglim. The first stage is before they actually articulate what they're saying, right? They say, the land is great, Ephes, right? However, everybody is strong and there are giants there. They haven't yet said explicitly, and because everybody's strong, we won't be able to conquer. And at that moment, before they even say what they're going to say, but if you're attuned to it, if you're sensitive to it, you'll already hear that this is the beginning of the setup, right? This is the rebellion. Kalev jumps in. Right, Vayahas Kalev et ha'am el Moshe, Vayomer alo nale v'yirashnu ota k'yachol nuchala. Kalev silences them and says, we can do it, don't worry. And then they shout him down, V'anashim ha'shalu imo, amru lo nuchala lo delam ki chazakum mimenu. Right? They say we can't do it, and then they speak badly about the land, and then they go on, we saw the giants, it's impossible, and they complain against Moshe and Aaron. And then they say, you know what, let's actually go back to Egypt. And at that moment, Yoshua and Kalev then tear their clothes and say to the Jewish people, no, we can do it, it's very, very good. But Kalev, right before, you see, right, Yoshua, when he heard the Jews rebelling, he didn't know it was rebellion. Kalev has an intuition. Before they even say what they mean, Kalev knows where this is going. Yoshua, once it's on the table and they say, we want to go back to Egypt, Yoshua jumps in with Kalev because he's a good person. But he doesn't have the intuition. He didn't realize where it was going before it was on the table. So Chazal see that Kalev is this very astute, very independent leader. And Yoshua, not so much. Despite that, Chazal in number 6 argue, "B'chol makom hikdim Yoshua leKalev, b'makom echad u'omer bilti Kalev v'nifuneh k'nizi v'Yoshua ben Nun." Most of the time in the Torah, Yoshua's name is mentioned before Kalev, except for once where Kalev comes first. "Min lameid sheshneim shkulin zev kazeh," which tells you that they're equal. And Chazal so then make an interesting claim, that even though they're different, they're equal, or they're both necessary, let's say, right? They have different strengths, right? Yoshua's strength might not, and this is what we're going to get to, might not be as much, Yoshua's strength, or weakness really, might be the secret to his strength. And that's what we're going to try to sort of get at here. But if we continue and try to figure out, okay, well, what exactly is the difference between them? So far, we've only seen that Yoshua seems like the weaker personality and Kalev the stronger. Yoshua has a less attuned insight into what people are doing. Kalev is more. Yoshua is not a self-starter. He needs Moshe's help. Kalev doesn't. But it goes beyond that. And here is where I think we start to get a key of to, okay, well, if this is true, if you'd ask me in a vacuum, if I had to pick one of these two to pick to take over Moshe, I would have voted Kalev. Right? Take the strong-willed, astute politician who knows what's going on, can read the people, doesn't need Moshe, because Moshe's going to die. Why do you want someone who needs Moshe there to support him once Moshe's dead? You want a Kalev. But it's not true. We pick Yoshua. So why do we pick Yoshua? Why is it that, and as we've said, Moshe's leadership needs to be replaced, is going to end. So why Yehoshua? So the first clue to this, I think, comes in number 7. In Perek Chav Zayin of Bamidbar, Moshe turns to God and begs him to pick a leader for the Jewish people. Right? He turns to God and said, make sure that somebody good takes over for me after I'm gone. And this is what Moshe says. Yifkod Adonai Elohei Ruchot L'chol Basar Ish HaLaida. God, the God of all spirit, the spirit of all flesh, appoint someone on the congregation, on the community. What type of person? Asher Yitzei Lifnehem, Asher Yavo Lifnehem, V'asher Yotzeim, V'asher Yivyeim, V'lo Tiyeh Adad Adonai Katzon Asher Ein Lehem Raweh. I want someone who's going to go out with them, who's going to come in before them, take them out, bring them in, so that God's community will not be like a sheep with no shepherd. Vayomer Adonai Moshe, kach lecha Yoshua ben Nun, ish asher ruach bo, v'samachta et yadcha alav. So Hashem says to Moshe, take Yoshua, a person who has a spirit in him, and put your hand on him. And then put him in front of Elazar the Kohen, and in front of the entire congregation, and command him in front of them. And give him of your glory, so the Jews will listen to him. Before Eliezer, who will ask the Urim V'Tumim, and through it you will go out, you'll come in, and he'll be put in charge. So this is the moment where we find out that Yoshua gets chosen. We find out why. Because he is, as Hashem says, he is a person with a ruach bo, with a spirit in him. Now, if you follow sort of that guide word of ruach in that story, the word ruach comes up very conspicuously twice. Right? God, Moshe turns to God and refers to God in a unique way, which is Hashem Elokei Haruchot, God, the God of spirits. And God responds by saying, Pik Yehoshua Asher Ruach Bo. Right? The simple, right? It sounds like what Hashem is saying, I'm picking Yehoshua because he has some of that ruach that you are referring to me as having. He has it. And what does it mean to be the Elokei HaRuchot L'chol Basar? What does it mean to be the God of the spirit of all people? So I should have put Rashi here, because this is Rashi sort of consistently. But Rashi says as follows. He says, what is Elokei HaRuchot? So Rashi said, Laman Emar, Amar Lefanav Rabbanu Shalom. He said to God, Galui Lefanecha Da'ato Shekol Achad Ve'Echad Ve'eno Domin Zelazeh. You know what every person is like, and they're not like each other. So pick someone who will also be able to handle each person, meaning each type of spirit. And the way Rashi seems to understand it is that Moshe says, I need somebody who's going to understand people, just like you do. You understand that people are different. And Hashem answers, Yehoshua is a person, Asher, Ruach Bo, he has that spirit. Now, Kalev also has a spirit, but it's a very different type of a spirit. Because if you look at the next source here, which somehow didn't get numbered, but the last one on this page, when Hashem is describing why Kalev is going to make it into Eretz Yisrael, this is how Hashem describes Kalev. Avdi Kalev, Ekev Haita, Ruach Acheret Imo. Kalev will make it into the land because he has a different spirit. Right? He has a different spirit. So I'll bring him in. And here is where I think you start to get the first clue. Kalev is an amazing leader. He's perfect. He can sense trouble before it happens. He can stand up for himself. That's a great thing. Sort of. It's great unless you want to try to identify with people. If you need someone to be an iconoclast, it's great. But it's very hard to get people to identify with you if you don't have struggles. Right? He's the perfect tzaddik. Nothing is hard for Kalev. Right? He doesn't even wait for trouble. He knows it's coming. He anticipates it. He helps himself. Yehoshua, Hashem identifies as being able to understand people. You see this again in the next sources. Not just with Ruach, but with another description of them, which is chazak, right? It's strength. So, in Yehoshua Perek Yudalit, that's the last source, but it goes on the next page. So, Kalev, as God promised him, will one day get the land, will get the city of Hebron, right? Where he went, so he's going to get Hebron. So in Yehoshua, we find out that it actually happens, right? God promises Hebron, and not surprisingly, God promises, he actually does it. But Perek Yudalit of Yehoshua describes how Kalev actually gets the city of Hebron. So the Yikshu v'nei Yehudael Yehoshua about Gilgal. So Kalev is from the Shevet Yehuda. So the people of Yehuda come to Yehoshua, and Vayomer Elav, Kalev ben Yifune Akinizi, and then Kalev, among his brothers, approaches Yehoshua and he says, Ataya data et adavar asher diber Hashem Moshe, isha Elokim, alo dotai, valo dotecha b'kadesh barnea. Said, remember, you know what God said about you and about me. When we, right, in Kadesh Barnea, meaning when we sent the spies. Remember the promise. Ben arbeim shana anochi b'shloch Moshe, eved Adonai oti mikadesh barnea l'ragel al haaretz, v'ashev oto davar kasherim levavi. Said, I was 40. Or when we were spies, And we were sent to spy the land. And I returned, and I said what was in my heart. V'achar asher alu imi himsivet lev ha'am v'anochim leitiv acharet mimi leiti acharei Adonai Elohai. And while my companions came and took the heart of the people, I was loyal to God. Vayishava Moshe bayom ulemor im lo haaretz asher dirachareg lecha ba lecha tiyeh lenachalo vanechar olam ki mileita acharei Adonai Elohai. And Moshe promised me that because you followed God completely, so you, the land that you tread your foot trod on will be for you. Vata. And he said, now it's the time for that promise to be fulfilled. It's been 45 years. It's been 45 years since that promise. And now I'm not 40 anymore, I'm 85. And now here we are in Israel. Oh, and he says, but you know what? Despite the fact that I'm 85, I'm not a young man anymore. Odeni ayom chazak, kasher biyom shalach oti Moshe kichochi az kichochi ata lemelchama v'latzev v'lavo. But I'm as strong as I was then. My strength then is my strength now. Right? I haven't aged a day. Right? From 40 to 85, I can still fight. I am eternally young. V'ata tnali et harazeh asher dibra Adonai bayom ahu ki ata shamata bayom ahu ki anakim sham barim gdolot b'tzurot ulai ad. And he said, give me this hill country, because even though they're the Anakim there, they're those same giants that were there 45 years ago, if God is with me, I'll dispossess them as Hashem promised. Right? This is Kalev at his best. Right? Kalev said this 45 years ago, and he says it again. The Meraglim were terrified of the giants. They said, we can't be giants. Kalev said, look, I wasn't afraid of the giants when I was 40 because I said, if God is with me, I can conquer giants. Now I'm 85. If God's with me, I can still fight the giants. Nothing's changed. My belief is the same. My strength is the same. I'm the same person through and through. I'm Chazak. So Yoshua blesses Kalev and he gives him Chevron. And you see this picture of Kalev. Right, it doesn't matter. He's 40 years old. He's 85 years old. Doesn't matter. Giants, no giants. He said, I need God, and that's it. I am as strong as ever. I don't weaken. Right, he sounds like Moshe. Right? He sounds like Moshe. At the end of the Torah, this is how the Torah describes Moshe. Right? All the way at the end of the Torah. This is exactly Moshe. Right? I jump to the end of the Torah. Right, Mamash? To Divrei HaYamim. Right, when it's describing, not the end of the Torah. The end. Right, the end of the Torah. Right, where Moshe ben Me'aves from Shemamoto lochatai novelo naslecho. Moshe dies 120. In the meantime, his eyes were still strong. The moisture in his skin hadn't faded away. Right, and when Moshe himself tells the Jewish people that he is not going to be able to go into Mitzrayim, he says this as well. Right? Let's find this. This is in whatever. We'll come back to it. But that's enough for this. Right? He says Moshe's like this also. Right? Doesn't matter no matter how old he gets. Right? When Moshe says that I can no longer go out and come back. Right? Rashi points out it's not because he's weak. It's because God said he can't go. Right? How does Rashi know that it's not because he's weak? Because the Torah says he never got weak. He at 120, he could have, if God hadn't said, you're going to die now, you're not going in, Moshe could have gone forever. Kalev, Moshe, these are people who are, you know, eternally strong. What about Yoshua? Yoshua, Dvarim Perek Aleph Pasuk Lamed Chet. Hashem tells Moshe, Yoshua ben Nun amed lefanecha, hu yavo shama. Yoshua, who stands before you, he is going to go into the land. Oto chazek, ki hu yanchil ana Israel. Strengthen him, because he's going to go. And then, so Moshe strengthens Yehoshua. Then, Moshe dies. Sefer Yoshua opens, and the first thing that God says to Yoshua is, Chazak ve'ematz, k'ata tanchil el ha'am hazeh ha'aretz, asher nishbati l'avotam latet lahem. Be strong and resolute, because you'll apportion to this people the land I swore to their fathers to assign to them. And then, later in that perek, I didn't give it to you, the Shvatim reiterate it and say, be strong, it'll be okay. Wait, Kalev, doesn't matter how old he is, right? 85 years old, he is willing to take on giants, right? He's like, I'm good, I'm strong, I'm okay, everything's fine. And Yoshua, he needs Moshe to strengthen him, he needs God to strengthen him again, he needs the people to strengthen him again, right? He's this character that it's, and it just, right, it just drives this, you know, this point home. Why is it, right, why is it that, that Yoshua, of all people, gets chosen? So, you know, let's skip for a moment to 14. And the secret, there seems to be more than one answer to this question. But the first answer to this question is one that I get from Rabbi Chaim Angel. And he answers it all with three psukim in Yoshua Perek Zion. So the background to the story is as follows. The Jews come into Israel. First battle is miraculous. Right? They come in. God says, you're going to conquer Jericho. It's going to be a breeze. He tells them, walk around the city once each day, blow the shofar. On the seventh day, walk around seven times, blow the shofar. The walls are going to sink into the ground. You're going to go in. You're going to win. That's it. Miraculous. It's going to be easy. That's what the Jews do. They're all confident. Everything's great. Unbeknownst to them, Achan, one person steals from Jericho, which was forbidden because they'd send a chirim on the city. And because of that, when they attempt to conquer the second city, which is Ai, they storm the city and they end up fleeing and 36 people are killed. And the people are demoralized. If you pause the story right there, and I said, okay, knowing everything you know about Chumash, what should happen right then? Right? If this was Moshe, what would have happened right then? The Jews would have said, what are you doing? You said we were going to go into Israel, that God was going to be with us, we were going to win, how did we lose? And what actually happens is what we have in number 14. Vayomer Yehoshua. Aha! Hashem Elokim, lama avarta evyer ha'am hazeh ha'yardein, latero tanav yan maril avidein, v'lo ha'alnum reshev ever yardein. God, why did you lead this people across the Jordan only to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to be destroyed by them? Be Hashem. Ma omar acharei asher hafach Yisrael oref lifnei evav. What am I going to say? That now that the Jews have turned their tails before their enemies. The Kanani are going to hear, they're going to destroy us from the land. What is going to happen to your great name? And our angel points out, you want to know the secret of Yoshua? The Jews never complain. Yoshua is the most idyllic leader. After all of the we've built up, that he's this weak personality, everyone needs to strengthen him, right? He isn't a self-starter, everything. You read through Yoshua, the Jews don't complain once. Doesn't matter what happens. They lose an eye, don't complain. In Givon, later on, they get tricked, don't complain. Right? They get angry at the leaders, right, who made the deal, they don't complain to Yoshua. Right? Doesn't matter what happens, they never complain. Yoshua gives them Musar, they say, okay, we'll do whatever you say. Nothing, never, no complaints. After Yeshua dies, they start sinning. Yeshua's lifetime, if you read the book of Yeshua, it's idyllic, it's perfect, everything's great. If he's so weak, why? Moshe couldn't handle it, but Yeshua could? And he said, and so our angel says, yeah, that's exactly the point. Because Moshe was so great and so perfect that the people felt he didn't understand them. And every time something wrong happened, what had happened, they complained. And Moshe said, why are you complaining? Just trust in God. That's very easy to say if you're Moshe. But if you're not Moshe, that's very hard to hear. The reason the Jews don't complain when things go bad in the time of Yeshua is because Yeshua complains. Because Yeshua is a great person, but he's not perfect, and he's not a born self-starter, and he's not a strong personality. So he understands their fears. He's as scared as they are. He constantly needs strengthening. So when they fail in their first battle, they don't need to complain to him, because before they can even complain, he's out there yelling at God, and they look at Yeshua and they say, hey, you know,
understands us.
Yeah, we get him. Or as Moshe said, Isha Sher Ruach Bo. Kalev would have been Moshe times two. Another perfect leader. But that didn't work so well. Right? It couldn't be. They couldn't identify with Moshe. That led to it. Every time, at some point, he stopped being able to relate to them, because every time they complained, he would say, I don't understand what's going on. He turned to God, I can't handle this. Right? Because he was perfect. You know, in 15, the Gemara says, "Kayotzei b'davar ata omer v'natata me'otcha alav v'lo kol otcha zekenim shvoto adar amru p'nei Moshe k'p'nei achama p'nei Yoshua k'p'nei levana oy la lota busha oy la lota klima." That Moshe's face was like the sun, and Yeshua was like the moon, and the elders said, "Woe for this embarrassment! Woe for this disgrace! That we didn't get another leader like Moshe." Right? That's what they all thought. Right? They all thought they needed someone as great as Moshe, but it turns out they don't. The Gemara, and I should have put this one, but the Gemara in Brachot puts this very nicely, right? The Gemara there says that at some point Moshe turns to them in Dvarim, and he says, "Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Meimach. What does God ask from you? Ki im liyarauto, but that you fear him, dafgabo, right? To love him, to cling to him," and gives a whole list, right? Fear him, love him, cling to him, do what he says. That's all he wants. And the Gemara says, "V'chimilta zutrasehi." Is that so easy? What is Moshe saying? What is God asking from you? Just to fear him, love him, follow him, do everything he says. That is a lot. And the Gemara says, "In milta zutrasehi." The Gemara says, "Yeah, it is. It's not so much. You know why? If somebody has something, to him it's nothing. And if you're a billionaire, so someone asks you for $1 million, big deal. If someone, right? If someone only has $5 to his name and someone needs $10, it's more than he can afford. Moshe had all the Yerushalayim in the world. He was perfect. Everything was great. So sure, for him, fear God, do what he says, love him, cling to him, do the whole laundry list of the Torah. Great, no problem. But what does that Gemara highlight? When Moshe would talk to the Jewish people, he would talk from his level. Ma Hashem Elokecha Shomel Meimachim Liyarato. What, it's no big deal, just fear him. But the people weren't hearing it because they weren't Moshe. And Yeshua ironically succeeds because he's a good person. He's a very good person. He's a great person. But he's not someone without struggles. He's not someone without fears. He's not someone who doesn't understand the average person. He does. He gets them. He's one of them. He didn't see what was coming with the Meraglim. He's not so astute. He can't read what's coming in advance. He experiences it as it happens. Like most people, he can't see 10 steps ahead. Okay, he makes mistakes, fine. But even though he makes mistakes, and even though he needs strengthening, in the end of the day, when push comes to shove, he makes the right decision. When it came to the Meraglim, in the end of the day, he said, I'm with God. I may not have been there the first time, I may not have seen where this was going, but once it's clear what's at stake, I'm with God. He never falters in that. And that type of combination, people can understand. They can understand somebody who makes the right decisions, even though he has to struggle. Kalev would have been just another Moshe, another perfect leader. Kalev's great. He's going to survive. Of course he's going to survive. He's amazing. He's Moshe again. And if you want to see this, look at Perek Yud Daled. Right? When God sentences the generation to death, So he says everyone's going to die except for. So he says it twice. In Perek Yud Dalet Pasuk Chav Bet, he says, "Kicholan Hashem Aruim Et Kvodi VeRototai Asher Asiti VeMitzrayim VeMidbar VeInasu Otize Eser Pamim VeLo Shamu BeKoli." And all the people who saw my glory and tested me these 10 times and didn't listen to me, Im Yeruah Aretz Asher Nishbat Lavatam VeChol Menad Sailo Yeruah, I swear, if they're going to see this land, all those who hate me are not going to see it. VeAvdi Kalev. My servant Kalev, Ekev, Ita Ruach Eri Move, Maleach, Raiva, Vyotiv, Elarach, Shabasham of Zaro Yorichena. Because he is unique and he has a different spirit, I'll bring him in. Who's not mentioned? Yoshua, right? Kalev, only Kalev, he's the only survivor. And then a few psukim later, he's retelling this and he says, that's when Moshe, when Hashem talks to Moshe. But now Hashem tells Moshe to convey the information, right? So he says, "Emor aleihem." This is pasuk kofchet. "Emor aleihem chayaninu Hashem im lo kasher dibartem bazni kenes el lochem." Vamidbar hazeh yiplu figrechem v'chol pekudechem v'chol misparchem yiben Hashem shana v'mal asher l'alitem alai. Tell them that you're all going to die. Your carcasses will fall in this desert. Imatem tavo l'artz asher nasati et yadi l'shaken etchem ba kiim kalev ben Yefuneh v'Yoshua ben Nun. No one's going to survive except Kalev and Yoshua. V'tabchem asher amartem lavaz yiyeh ve'veiti otam yadu et haaretz asher ma'astem ba. And the children who you thought, right, would be killed, they're going to go into it. And then he goes on through this, and at the end, right, pasuk lamed zayin v'yamutu an Hashem otzei dibar haaretz ra'ava magefa lefnei Hashem. All the people who spoke about the land died. V'Yoshua ben Nun v'Kalev ben Yefuneh chayu min Hashem ahim alchum lator. At Aretz. Yoshua and Kalev live. Why is Kalev singled out the first time, Yoshua and Kalev the second time? So it's clear they're surviving for different reasons. Like Kalev, God says, look, everyone's dying except for Kalev. Kalev is unique. Where does Yoshua find out he's surviving, so to speak, when you find out which of the people are surviving? The kids. Right? Kalev is standalone. He is going to be a holdover from this generation who's going to survive. Yoshua is going to survive because he manages to be part of the next generation. And that's the difference. Right? Kalev will survive by himself. Kalev is unique. Kalev is my servant. And Avdi Kalev, he's with me. It's like Moshe. Avdi Moshe, Avdi Kalev, my servant. He's unique. He'll go in by himself. Yoshua is going in also. But Yoshua, we find out Yoshua is surviving when we find out that there'll be a generation that survives too. The generation that Yoshua is going to lead. Because he's part of them. He's not standalone from everybody else. He's going because he's part of everybody else. And that's the person that they need to that's the person that they need to take over. If you look at 13 in the summary in Dvarim, this becomes even clearer. This is the last source on that second page. Vayishma Hashem al kol divrechem vayiktov vayishav alemor. Right, Moshe is retelling the story. So God heard your words and he got angry and he swore. Im yireh ish bar Hashem ha'ilah hador hara azer aretz hatovah asher nishbati latei lavoteichem. If anybody lives to see to go into the land, zulati kalev ben Yefuneh hu yirenev v'lo atein aretz asher tarach ba uvanav yan asher milei achareh Adonai. Except for Kalev, I'll give it to him and his children because he followed God. Gambi etanaf Hashem biglal chem lemor gamatalu tavosham. And God got angry at me as well and said, you won't go in. Yeshua binun ha'omei lefanecha hu yavoshama oto chazek ki hu yanchilana Yisrael. But take Yeshua and strengthen him because he will give it to the Jews. And you see it very clearly. Kalev survives by himself. Yeshua survives as the leader of the next generation. Right? He's the one. He survives to bring the Jews in. He survives to give them the land. That's his uniqueness. Not that he can stand alone and be a servant of God, but that he can successfully bring the Jews in. He can bring in that next generation. That's why he is unique. But ironically, im kolzeh, there's a paradox in Yoshua, right? Kalev, personality-wise, is more Moshe-like. He's strong, he's independent, and therefore you know, you can speculate he would face the same struggles that Moshe did. And Yeshua is one of the people, and that's why he can manage to be great, but have them identify with him. But on the other hand, Yeshua is paradoxically chosen because he is Moshe's heir. And that's what, you know, you have to remember, is that on the one hand, he's personality-wise very different from Moshe. But legacy-wise, he's Moshe's student. Kalev, I guess, is like everybody else is. But he's not the person who was always in the tent with Moshe. Consistently, Yeshua is the Nar Lo Yamush Mitov Chol. He's always with him. And you look at the Sifrei in number 11. The Sifrei brings this out clearly. He says, Vayom Rasham Moshe, Kach Lechad Yeshua Ben Nun, Et Shebilibcha. Right? Take what is in your heart. Kach Lecha Mashe Davuk, Mashe Baduk Lecha. Take what you know. Alecha Mefurash, Mishlei Chav Zayin, Notzar Teina Yochal Piriyai. So this is what it says in Mishlei, that the watcher of the fig tree will eat its fruit, and the keeper of his master will be honored. Isha Sheruach Bo, Shechol Lahaloch, Keneged Ruchot Shel Kol Echad Ve'Echad. And this is what I mentioned before, right? Someone who can understand everybody's spirit. V'samachta Yochal Alav. But put your hand on him. Amarlo, Tain Turgeman LeYoshua. So we told him, give Yoshua an interpreter, meaning make an interpreter or a spokesman. Was if you were the leader, they didn't have microphones, so you would say it, and then someone who was loud would scream it on your behalf. So giving someone an interpreter or a loudspeaker was giving him the podium. Give him the opportunity to answer halachic rulings in your lifetime. The people won't say that in his teacher's lifetime he couldn't rule, and now he does. So immediately he put him on the judge's bench. Rabbi Natan Omar, Kevin Shayoshe, Nichnas Laretz, Hayam Mashtiga, the Turgaman, Shenichnas, Viatza, Viashav, Bimkomo. Right? When he entered, Moshe would silence the interpreter until he had comments in his place. And Moshe is giving him the reins. But that midrash highlights two things at once. On the one hand, Yeshua should have been nothing in Moshe's lifetime. He is dependent on Moshe. But on the other hand, part of the reason he was such a weak personality, so to speak, is because his main legacy was that he was the student of Moshe. So it's ironic. But Yeshua takes over for two reasons. One is because personality-wise, he's different from Moshe and Kalev. But two is he has to take over not Kalev, because Moshe may have been too perfect to lead the people. But that doesn't mean he wasn't the greatest leader we ever had. The next leader, even if personality-wise he has to be different from Moshe, legacy-wise he needs to be Moshe number two. And Yeshua has that fascinating mix of being the second generation of Moshe's legacy, but personality-wise a much more human personality than the semi-divine Moshe. And that's the paradox of Yeshua that makes him so successful. He's personality-wise, everyone understands him, but they also know very well that legacy-wise, he's Moshe's student, right? His style of leadership may be his own, but the message of his leadership is the same. And that's exactly what you need, because even though Moshe isn't going to be able to continue, he's going to weaken, his leadership will be challenged, he won't be the one who takes them into Israel. You want a Yeshua. You want someone who makes it clear. Moshe emet v'torato emet. His message is on point. But maybe we need someone with a different style. Maybe someone a little bit more human who can be Moshe's student even without being as perfect as Moshe. And Yeshua has both of those. Kalev has neither. Right? Kalev is perfect and Kalev is independent. Yeshua is dependent on Moshe. And therefore, by being dependent on Moshe, he gets both things simultaneously. He's clear that he's a more human personality, but he's also the continuation of the legacy. And just to finish that off, right, Tamir Granot says in 16, right, he puts this very nicely, he says, the significance of the choice of Yeshua as Moshe's successor is the selection of a style of leadership whose main power is its faithfulness to the original, and whose main foundation is faith in God and his salvation. From this point of view, the first stage of the entry into the land led by Yeshua represents a continuation of Moshe's leadership in the wilderness. However, and this is the last point, because Yehoshua is really just the end of Moshe, right? He's the complement of Moshe. He's the second generation of Moshe's legacy. He has no children and he has no continuation because he's Moshe's heir apparent, but there is no heir apparent to Yehoshua because Yehoshua ends and there is no leader whatsoever. It's the period of the Shoftim. It's the period of individual tribal leaders. There's no national leader again till Shmuel, right? Hundreds of years later. Because Yehoshua is Moshe's heir. But after that, there can be no replication of the Moshe Yehoshua dynasty. He said, however, there's no continuation of Yehoshua's leadership, as the Midrash forcefully points out. And this is a Midrash in Psikta Zuta. Rabbah says, Yehoshua tried to start speaking, but they said to them, will a severed head then speak? In other words, since he had no son, they called him a severed head. And how do we know that he had no son? Because we read in Divrei HaYamim that Nun, his son, Yehoshua, his son, but there's no continuation after Yehoshua. There are no children. They said to him, what can you possibly say? You have no reason to fear whether you live or die. You have neither sons nor daughters. But they, the people, are fearful for their wives and children, and they immediately silenced him. Now, right here, this is a bit of a different one. They think he can't understand them because of the children. So we'll have to, that is clearly a different Midrash tradition. But we'll focus on this point for now. Rabbah explains that Yehoshua has indeed tried to make himself heard, even at the first stage, but the people silenced him, such that we only hear Kalev's words. Was it only Kalev's cunning that helped him, as we see below, or is there a difference between Yehoshua and Kalev in terms of the content of their speeches too? And in any case, from where does Rabbah deduce that Yehoshua tried to start speaking, they would not listen to him, right? This Midrash is from the Meraglim story. So often, Midrashei Chazal are meant not to describe what happened, but rather what should have happened. Rabbah is wondering what Yehoshua said at the end he could have said earlier on. Why did he not offer his view? The people insult Yehoshua. They call him a severed head, a leader with no successor. In actual fact, the people are right. It's no coincidence that Yehoshua has no sons. He's not the head of a dynasty, but rather the end of a dynasty founded by Moshe. He is the conclusion of Moshe's spiritual dynasty. Right, so as you know, we've gone through Bamidbar so far, and we've pointed out one of that central themes is how did it happen that Moshe's leadership ended up ending and Yehoshua ends up taking over? Right, this is the story where you see it. The Kalev is a hero. Kalev is perfect. Kalev is great. Kalev is Moshe again. So of course he's going to succeed. But what you need is Yehoshua. You need someone who, first of all, says the message of Moshe is on point. And as we saw this already last week, that Shadal suggests the reason that people don't want to listen to Yehoshua, they want to listen to Kalev, is because they know that Yehoshua is just going to say whatever Moshe would want him to say. Kalev can be independent, which allows him more freedom, but God wanted it to be that even if Moshe was going to end, he wasn't going to make it into Israel. He was going to fail because of his sins, because of his inability to identify with the people and therefore get angry at them and everything that we'll see when God finally says you can't come. He needed to make two things clear. One is that Moshe is perfect. His message is perfect. The flaw in Moshe is not that he was false. Right? That's not the problem. His flaw has nothing to do with that. It has to do that he got angry with the people, that he had, you know, there were trouble in him relating to the people. Fine. He needed a leader who could say with integrity, I'm legacy-wise, message-wise, fully on point, I'm just Moshe's student. But on the other hand, could solve the problems of Moshe's leadership, which at some level were predicated on the fact that Moshe was just too good and too perfect, and Yehoshua managed to have both of those qualities. He manages to be Moshe's student, but be a weaker, more human personality. And therefore, we find out at the end of Bamidbar that when Moshe finally sins and Hashem says, you're not going in, and Moshe says, okay, well, who is? Hashem says, Yehoshua, Ish Asher Ruach Bo, who has that spirit in him, who understands people, V'samachta Yadcha Alav, and put your hands on him, and give him of your legacy, give him of your energy, because then he'll have both things together. His humanity, his, you know, normalness, normalcy, whatever, that you don't have, while still being your true heir in a legacy sense, and therefore he takes over and he ends up having an idyllic leadership with no complaints, because that Moshe's message without Moshe's perfection was just the perfect mix for the book of Yehoshua. But there's also no, there can be no heir to that. There is no, that's the end of an era. Yeshua is the coda of the Moshe era, but after that there can be no, right? There can be no continuation. And what you end up having in Sefer Shoftim is regional leaders for several hundred years as the Jews sort of go through a different stage, and they don't coalesce again until under a national leader of that magnitude until Shmuel, right? Which is really the story of Shoftim, which is how do you get there? So Yeshua, you know, Sefer Yeshua is really the story of how that mix of a personality continues perfecting and continuing Moshe's legacy at the same time. So that brings